Hello and welcome, friends, to another edition of Sustainability Now, right here on your community radio station. We are Forward Radio, WFMP LP Louisville, broadcasting to you from high atop the historic Hayburn Building here in downtown Louisville at 106.5 FM. But we also live stream anywhere you are in the world, perhaps over in Leeds, England. You can listen to our live stream at forwardradio.org and find archives of all of our local programs and podcasts to share with your friends. It's also the place to go to become a part of our community station. This is radio for the people, by the people, and we would love you all to be some of the people here behind the microphones or behind the scenes helping us make this radio magic every day here on Forward Radio. You can become a sponsor of our station at forwardradio.org. You can chip in a few bucks to keep us on the air, or you can become a volunteer by clicking on participate. Well, what we're going to do today on Sustainability Now is make some connections across the pond. We are patching in to our friends in Leeds, England, 4,000 miles away, a sister city of Louisville. And we have with us Rachel Unsworth and Clary Ramsden, who are two participants in community radio at Chapel FM in Leeds. Rachel is the host of Think Global, Act Local on East Leeds Community Radio, and she's a professional geographer, a seasoned tour guide and presenter. And Clary Ramsden is with us as well, a regular reporter on the show, and also does some amazing local activism that we're going to talk about this hour, running a group called Climate Action Seacroft, part of Climate Action Leeds, which is this five-year program funded by the UK National Lottery. So great to have you both with me on the program today. Welcome to Louisville.
Hey up, as we say in Leeds.
And hello from me.
Welcome from 4,000 miles away. My name is Justin Mogg. I am one of the volunteers here at Forward Radio, WFMP LP. That means low power. We are a low power community radio station that started in 2017 right here in Louisville, Kentucky, in the heart of the United States. And Louisville is a sister or twin city of Leeds, England, which is why I am so excited to be speaking with you all today and sharing some of the similarities and differences across the Grand Pond, right? So how are you all doing there?
Cold.
Yeah, still quite chilly. But we're very sensibly rugged up instead of... We wouldn't be allowed a little electric heater anyway because it would interfere with the sound, but we're very stalwart.
Excellent. Here in Louisville, spring is definitely popping, and I'm trying to decide whether to wear long sleeves or short sleeves. It's that kind of time of year here in Louisville, but it's an exciting time as things start to bloom and bees start to buzz and some of the foraging crops become available for us to wander the landscape and eat off the land. I just love this time of year. And I know it's always a little different talking across such great distances, but it is a great pleasure to be in conversation with you all today. I think we're going to try and make a little bit of radio magic connection across 4,000 miles and learn what each other is up to and what some of the similarities and differences are. So please, I'll tell you more about what I do here at Forward Radio, but let's hear from Rachel and Clary what you all do.
In Leeds, we try to give a flavour of both what's happening at the city level and even beyond sometimes. And we also try to do lots of local things, and that's where Clary comes in.
Yeah,
I'm the hub worker for Climate Action Seacroft, and I also work for the LS14 Trust, which is the local postcode. And my job really is as a shenanigator, getting people to enjoy themselves and have lots of fun and get out in nature.
Yeah.
So it's a great job, really.
Yeah, that is a great job. Wow. We definitely struggle with that here in Louisville. I've lived in many parts of the United States, including Madison, Wisconsin, where I went to graduate school and lived there for a decade and did community radio there as well at WRT, which is a wonderful community radio station in Madison. And that culture there is very much get outdoors. Everybody loves to explore the outdoors in all seasons. Big winter lovers up there. Louisville, Kentucky is more of an indoor culture, I think, unfortunately. So not that nobody wants to get outside, but it's a bit more of a struggle to find fellow travelers who want to get out and hike.
I had a look, and there's lots of parks, aren't there, in Louisville? Lots of places to go wandering around.
Yeah, actually, it's known as a city of parks, and we have parkways as well, linking some of our parks together, and they are really cherished, for sure. Perhaps under-resourced by the city, but we can all complain about these things, right?
Yeah. So, Justin, you say about being more of an indoor city. Is that because, I mean, you say it's already 70 with you, which is over 20 degrees centigrade. And how hot does it get in the middle of the summer?
Oh, yeah. We're in the 90 degree Fahrenheit and up. It usually doesn't break 100 more than a day or two here, but it does. So certainly, yeah, summer is, for me as a bike commuter, summer is the hardest month. And I don't understand. Everybody else kind of hunkers down all winter when I find our winters to be pretty mild here. It hardly snows. And then they bring out the bikes this time of year and we'll try and cycle when it's, you know, in the 90s. And it's just a sweaty mess.
That sounds awful. As a redhead, I would just melt and burn and blister in those temperatures. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness, yes.
So that brings us then also to the differences of geography. I mean, nowhere in Britain is very far from the sea, but actually crucially, Leeds is an inland city, and although we have a river that isn't very many feet above sea level, it is crucially not as prone to flooding as many places all around the edge of Britain are. And generally around the world, if you're not coastal and you're not prone to really serious river flooding, you're in a fortunate position. But it means there's extra responsibility, I think, on the places that are more climate resilient just because of the topography and where you are, to be welcoming of the folk who are going to be struggling more as climate change really takes hold.
That's a lovely point.
This is perhaps a strange moment to mention this, but tell us about the lie of the land in Louisville.
Well, there's a similarity right there. We are a river town here on the Ohio River, which when it meets the Grand Mississippi River that lots of people know about, it's actually larger in volume when it meets the Mississippi down in Cairo, Illinois, on the western edge of the state of Kentucky that I'm in. But there are many rivers towns along this Grand River, all the way down to where it empties out into the ocean at New Orleans, right? Because the river used to be the superhighway of the Americas, right? When all of the transportation happened along these large navigable waters. And actually, Kentucky has more miles of navigable waterways than any other state in the lower 48 here in North America. So we are blessed with lots of water. And as climate change happens, we are getting more of it. We are becoming wetter, as the scientists predicted we would. And so we are concerned about potential flooding for sure. We haven't had a really big one where we have to close the flood wall for over a decade now. But I sense that it's likely to come, and the city does too. So certainly part of our climate resilience is being prepared for flooding. And in fact, there are some lower-lying areas of the city that the city has gone ahead and purchased the properties and displaced the residents because they don't want to have to rebuild on these sites, right? And turn them into green spaces and parks and things like that. So that is definitely a concern for us. But Louisville has always been a refugee resettlement city. We are federally recognized as a city where international refugees get resettled, which is one of the things that makes our city so wonderful and vibrant and such a special place to live. But we are likely to see an influx of climate refugees as well from not only all over the world, but from the coastal areas of the United States where most people live, right? And this is a wonderful place to resettle. And there's lots of opportunities here. We are an industrial city still to this day. It is one of the things that challenges our air quality and certainly contributes to our carbon footprint as a city. But we are in the heart of the country. And in fact, the UPS package service has chosen Louisville as their world port. So we get actually a lot of freight air traffic, as well as freight rail and freight out on the rivers, too. So barges are going by all the time. So it is a very dynamic place with a lot happening and a lot of opportunity for sure. But we are in a state, much like Leeds is in a region, that used to be very coal dependent as driving our economy. And so when we look at the whole larger picture outside of the city and look at the state, we're dealing with sort of a bit of a economic transition and a depression away from fossil fuel based economy. And I imagine that's a challenge there as well, right?
Yes, we've had actually nearly a century of transitioning from the heaviest industry through to picking up more on the service side. We do still have industry, but it's a tiny percentage compared with what it was. We have some niche engineering and we have medical tech businesses here and a lot of clinical exploration as well. So it's what you call meds and eds in the States, isn't it?
Right.
So the biggest employers are the hospital and the universities and also the local authority. But we've also got a very big private sector involved in financial and business services, not just for Leeds, not just for the region, but for the country as well. And very diverse. It's always been very diverse. And we're also, just to pick up on one of your other themes, one of the cities of sanctuary. And Leeds as a whole is much more diverse than it was when we did a book in the geography department 20 years ago, where parts of East Leeds were almost completely just ethnically uniform. And now every area of Leeds is much more mixed, isn't it?
It is.
Clary, just in the time you've lived here.
In Leeds since, late 80s, I suppose. And yeah, it's changed enormously. I came as a student and it was majority white. And now I think we're about 80% white in Seacroft area where we are and about 20% other ethnicities. So it is changing quite substantially. Certainly in Hare Hills, where I lived when I was a student, that's always been a place of change. About 100 years ago, it was mainly Jewish and they moved further along to the more affluent areas. And then along came some more refugees from abroad. And now it's sort of Polish, Eastern European. Mm. And it's a lovely place of change.
Yeah. I think our city is beginning to embrace the diversity. But of course, we can't ignore the racist past of our city. Kentucky was sort of a border state way back in the Civil War, right? But slavery is a part of our history that many continue to not want to truly acknowledge. And in fact, of course, this is becoming a national political issue, right? Where they're trying to ban even conversation and learning about our racist past in schools.
But it was also a place, as I understand it, where escaped slaves would go to then move across the border to
precisely
freedom.
Kentucky has been part of the Underground Railroad, as they called it, for escaped slaves. And we are right here on the borderlands then for freedom. So there's actually some wonderful reclaiming of that history through public art right on our riverfront here. Just imagining people who had perhaps walked or come in ox carts or whatever, all the way from the deep south, from Mississippi, from Alabama, from Georgia, to escape their enslavement and getting here to the edge of freedom and just having to do one more crossing to get to freedom. So that is some part of our history that is trying to be reclaimed. In more recent times, though, there is a real legacy that endures here in Louisville of segregation and some redlining laws, which I don't know if that's been an issue in the UK, but certainly throughout cities of the United States where black people weren't able to get home loans from banks that redlined out those neighborhoods. And this was official policy of the government, of the institutions in our city that basically led to disinvestment in our black communities, that the legacy of that lingers today. And it is something we absolutely need to wrestle with and continue to address if we're going to see a way forward for sustainability and better health for everybody. We can't simply sweep our, you know, environmental troubles into the west end of Louisville that was redlined and make it a place of suburban glee for everybody else. Like this has been the policy of development over time, is that white people have fled the downtown areas where I'm coming to you from now and done really unsustainable suburban development out in the green spaces and agricultural land surrounding the city. And it's put us in a place now where it's very difficult to see a way forward because of such a sprawling city.
Indeed. So there are several things there that chime with us. One is that Climate Action Leeds, which is the umbrella under which we work now, has a very strong social justice element to it. And another is that we also, although we haven't got the extreme suburbanisation that you have in a typical American cities, we are also too spread out on the edges of Leeds. And we are also one of the biggest cities, if not the biggest city in Europe, without a modern transit system. I don't know what it's like for people moving around within neighbourhoods and between neighbourhoods in your city, but here we really have a lot of difficulty because we have a bus system, but we don't have a modern tram system or trolley bus system. What's it like with you?
Oh, that sounds very similar to us. We have an underfunded bus system that constantly struggles to balance the needs of an insufficiently dense urban core, right? There's a lot of vacant and abandoned properties in our urban core because of this white flight. There's also a lot of things like vast parking lots, which make our neighborhoods unwalkable, right? And so the bus system is insufficient and really only used by those who have no other option. And it is sort of assumed that everyone will drive a car everywhere they need to go.
That's an interesting contrast to here, because the local government are making it so people don't take the cars into the centre of the city now, and people are encouraged to use public transport. So our local mayor has made no bus journey more expensive than £2.
That's fantastic, yeah.
It is, and it means you don't have to worry about parking, and we've got park and ride where you can park your car on the edge of the city, get the bus in, get the bus back. So it's also, of course, making the air much cleaner. So for people like me who are severely asthmatic, it's so much better than it was, you know, a few years ago.
Wonderful.
But we get lots of complaints.
Yes.
Because people have got used to exercising what they seem to think is their inalienable right to drive wherever and whenever. And people complain to me about, it's so difficult getting into the city centre. Oh, I can't cope with driving in the city centre. And my response is, good.
Yes, get on a bus.
It's meant to be difficult.
Get on your bicycle and ride there.
Or walk. Yeah. Yes. A lot of us live within walking distance of the city centre. But
we've got really good cycle infrastructure now. So you could actually cycle all the way into Leeds and actually all the way through to Bradford, Garforth. We've got an active travel hub coming online soon. So we'll have led rides, led walks, all sorts of things. It's free and you get a nice cup of tea and a biscuit afterwards.
That sounds delightful.
Just as if you've given blood at the blood donor place. Yeah. Very nice. Oh, that's lovely. So, Clary, when did you take up cycling?
Well, I've cycled all my life, really. When I was little, we had one bicycle between the four children, and we used to take turns in cycling it round the garden until my big brother put a broomstick through the front wheel and I went, whee! over the handlebars. But yeah, I've cycled all my life, really.
Me too.
And then more recently, I couldn't cycle for a while because my asthma was so bad, but the medication I'm on now means that I can cycle again, I can do anything I want, and it's wonderful. I do have an electric bike and a normal bike as well. And I just love whizzing around on it because it's so freeing.
Yes, and you know how long it's going to take you to get from A to B, don't you?
Exactly.
Or if you're on foot. So, Justin, you cycle around mainly, you prefer in the winter. How many others are using that as their main mode of transport?
Oh, it's small. It's, you know, not above 4% or so of the city's population are using bikes pretty regularly. There is some cycle infrastructure that's more recreational, but the city has added more bicycle lanes on many city streets, and a big project is to convert our excessively wide one-way streets that were designed for white flight to get white people out of the urban centers as quickly as possible in their cars, right, to the suburbs. So converting those back to slower, saner streets for people that are two-way, perhaps have bike infrastructure as well, and just are designed for people to actually not get through, but enjoy the place they're in, which is our urban core. Yeah.
If only you could even go a step further and use such wide streets to have public traffic
exactly.
down the middle.
Right. It really is ripe for that kind of opportunity. And certainly our city has bandied about conversations about light rail for years. But I would just love it if we got some heavy rail. I mean, intercity passenger rail returned to Louisville. We haven't had it in decades. And I am a big, big fan of long-distance rail, especially in this gigantic continent I'm on compared to England, right? It is just a luxury to be able to take it easy and not cram myself into a sardine can and burn all kinds of fossil fuels as most people do to get around by air travel. So I try and take our Amtrak system whenever I can. And in fact, I am planning now a trip to a conference in New Orleans in June. And then for the big solar eclipse that is coming to North America, I don't know if it's going to hit you all in Europe, but on April 8th, we're going to have a complete solar eclipse. And so I am traveling by rail to Arkansas and Texas to visit friends and to see that eclipse as well. So I'm really excited about that.
Obviously, the plants will take a pause during the solar eclipse just for a very short moment, and nature will get very confused briefly. But normally the patterns of the season influences the growing of crops and gardens and so on. So, Clary, we'd love you to tell people in Louisville about what you get up to in terms of the growing here in East Leeds.
I'll keep it clean then. Well, we get up to all sorts. If we go foraging along the Beck, there's lots of wild garlic starting to come through now. I love foraging, actually, because you never know quite what you're going to find. I'm starting to get my beans going and my corn and my squash for the Three Sisters.
Oh, great. We do that too.
Because that's actually a really successful way of growing, isn't it? And that came from the States, where you have the corn growing up tall in the middle with the beans growing around it and then the squash providing ground cover below. My rhubarb's shooting up now.
Well, that's a very Yorkshire thing.
Oh, I love rhubarb. Do you have rhubarb in Louisville?
We do, yeah.
Oh, it's gorgeous, isn't it? Rhubarb crumble with ginger in it. Oh. I'm making myself hungry now. Served with custard. Oh, lovely. So, yeah, my potatoes are chitted and they'll be going in soon.
Oh, really? Okay, great.
Do you use that word, chitted?
No, but I think I know what you mean, where you divide them up so you have an eye for the plant
that's
to sprout
it,
from.
Yeah. Chitting is when you get them sprouting before you plant them. But I find that I have some little helpers. My two dogs, well, they're not so little helpers, huge helpers. My dogs love to steal potatoes from the kitchen and then go and bury them in the garden for me. So I never know quite where they're going to pop up.
Well, that's fun.
But yes, we're just coming to the start of the growing season. We can just about still get garlic in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But I try to grow sustainable crops, really. So I have some Caballonero that keeps coming back, perpetual spinach, some miner's lettuce, which just takes over the garden, strawberries. Mm. So I have to do very little, really, to keep everything cropping.
Do you do asparagus?
I don't, actually, at the moment, but it does grow over here,
Nice perennial crop.
Basically, because I'm impatient, you'd have to wait about 3 years to get a crop.
Do you plant straight into the beds where they're going to mature, or do you plant in a greenhouse first?
Some of them I plant in the greenhouse first from seed to get them going, and some others I'll just put a little plug in that I get from the garden centre if I've not got round to putting my seeds in time.
So that's for you, but at community level, tell us about what goes on.
At community level, we've got the most amazing forest garden. It's a piece of land that had never been used for anything in the middle of some houses.
Cool.
So the ground was so fertile with a huge oak tree in there. And Climate Action Seacroft have planted loads and loads and loads of fruit trees and fruit bushes using the forest garden principle. So the trees are the highest and then bushes underneath that and then herbs underneath that to mimic the levels of the forest.
Spectacular.
And then there's a little grow area on there for sustainable crops. There's a dye garden part of it, and it's just the most peaceful place. You forget that you're in a large city or a large housing estate, because the estate was built just after the Second World War as homes for heroes. So it's a fairly recent estate, and at the time it was built, it was the biggest in Europe, the biggest social housing estate in Europe. So that goes on literally in the center of the housing estate, and it's just incredible when you go there. It really is beautiful. And some of the crops go from there to our community pantry.
Oh, terrific.
For people in the local area to use. And then we've got a community allotment, we've got two community orchards, and we've just planted a load more trees on there. And each tree has been adopted by a local resident. So there's a little dedication plate on the tree, stamped in metal, and then also another one saying what species of tree it is. And very interestingly, it's just near a high school, and when we were planting them, some of the people going past were saying, "Hey, lass, you shouldn't plant that there, them kids will pull it out." But they haven't. I think because of the dedication plates and because it's within an existing orchard area, it's valued more. So we're going to be planting more trees along the green verges of the streets and having those dedicated to people, and also in the local parks as well. So wherever we can, we're putting fruit trees and means of people taking fruit and vegetables and herbs for free.
Yeah. One of the things we are challenged with here in Louisville, Kentucky, with our community orchards, is the maintenance. It's easy to plant them, but then who is in charge of maintaining?
Well, that's why you have people adopting
the
trees.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Because then you invite them back for pruning workshops, and they help you look after them. For instance, one of the adopters is a young widow, and she takes her two boys to go and see Daddy's tree. Which is lovely,
that
isn't
really
it?
Is. Yeah. Really, I like that model.
Really nice.
And generally around the city, they've been trying to plant thousands of trees.
Yes.
In fact, although Leeds could be a greener city in all sorts of respects in terms of sustainability proper, it shows off about being the greenest city in the country. It's because our boundaries are flung wide and include some woodland areas and then countryside farmland and so on. But we are able to devote quite a lot of space to trees and to tree planting. And equally, just as Claria said, you know, people have been involved here in East Leeds. So they get school children involved in doing tree planting. The university has made sure that local folk are involved in the planting. And so then there's more pride and wanting to nurture.
And ownership in the trees as well. It almost becomes your actual family tree. If you think of it, you know, you plant it with your child that maybe is three or four, and you know that when they've got grandchildren of that age, that tree will still be there. And I think that's absolutely incredible, actually.
That's wonderful, and especially if they're more slow-growing hardwood
like
an oak. So in Louisville, what are the most common species and that do really well?
Oh, that is a great question, and it's been changing, right? So with climate change, we know that the old species that used to be happy here might not be able to survive so well. But we have wonderful oaks and maple trees, for sure, that I love to plant in our urban core, wherever there aren't overhead power lines, which is something we struggle with, right? But there is such a need for increased urban canopy to provide shade and cool our city. Louisville actually has been documented as having one of the most rapidly increasing urban heat island effects of any city in the United States. And that is because of the loss of our urban tree canopy. It's in the tens of thousands of trees. I think it's about 40,000 that we lose every year to development, disease, simply. It's very hard to grow trees in urban environments.
That's very interesting. Here in Leeds, the council will only remove a tree if it's dead, diseased, dying or dangerous. And if they have to remove a tree, they will then replace the habitat.
Terrific, yeah.
So in one of our development areas of King George's Garden, some holly trees had to come out and canopies lifted. But then they replaced the habitat by putting more trees on the local park. So we're not actually losing trees, we're gaining them.
Yeah, that's terrific.
It's quite clever, really. Yeah, and the Green Spaces team work really closely with us at Climate Action Seacroft to see what they can do to support us in making Seacroft greener, cleaner and more environmentally friendly.
Yeah. So getting back to what I was saying earlier about the sort of environmental injustice issues in our city, it's not just pollution, but there's actually less tree canopy in our previously redlined, segregated black neighborhoods in the west end of the city. And just this past weekend, I was volunteering with one of our wonderful nonprofits, Louisville Grows, which is a tree planting and urban agriculture promoting organization. And they sponsor these community tree plantings. We did 120 trees into the ground on Saturday in some of those west end neighborhoods. One's called California neighborhood, the other one's called Parkland. Ironically enough, really needs trees, and so gratifying to be out there with fellow students at the University of Louisville and other members of the community who volunteered to help out with that. I've been here since 2009, and I bike around the city, and it's so gratifying to go down a street and say, I planted that tree. I remember when it was just a few feet tall, and look at it now.
You'll have to get them adopted.
I know. I love that idea. Yeah.
Just get some metal stamps and some little metal plates and just stamp a message on them. And it's just so lovely knowing that tree is genuinely cared for. We all need a bit of nurture, don't we?
Oh, yeah. My wife actually did that model with her urban orchard that she started on vacant lots in one of our West End neighborhoods, that she was able to secure land from the land bank of the city to start an orchard. And she's one of the only people in the region growing almonds, which are traditionally grown out on the West Coast. And she grows some truly delicious, very almondy almonds, and to sort of crowdfund that project, she had people sponsor the trees and made little metal nameplates for them.
Nice. Yeah. Almonds will grow quite happily.
Oh, really?
Over here. The only reason we haven't planted them on the orchard is because of allergies, with it being near a school.
Ah, interesting.
So we were guided against nut trees in that area, unfortunately. Huh.
A bit daft, isn't it really?
Is. But, you're severely allergic, I suppose.
Well, there are plenty of other choices here. So our main ones are, what would you say, oaks?
Oaks, for sure. Chestnuts, horse chestnuts.
Sycamores just grow.
They grow all over.
The whole thing would be a sycamore forest, I think, wouldn't it?
Hazelnuts. They grow really happily.
Birch trees are very easy. They take very easily. They're sort of pioneer species, aren't they?
Yeah, cobnuts down south. Huh. Mm. Cobnuts are delicious, aren't they? A bit like hazelnuts, but even more yummy. They're a bit bigger and a bit more waxy, I suppose. Yeah. But they're delicious.
So we've got quite a wide range, but we don't have as many different oaks as you have in North America, for sure. But we try to go for a mix of deciduous, with some conifers, but we've gone away from that just monoculture way of doing woodland and forestry. Yeah. As much as we can. So you were talking about the lack of tree canopy and the great swathes of parking lots in Louisville. I mean, here, when you look down on the city from a tall building, you're aware of, yes, that we've got quite a lot of trees, but not enough in the most densely developed areas. But what we're lacking is also solar panels. Mm. Parking lots that are just open land and haven't even got solar panels that the cars could get some shade under anyway in the summer. Why is land used like that in the 21st century?
Great question.
You know, it's preposterous.
Great question.
It is. I mean, our council again is supporting local residents to have retrofitted onto the houses, better insulation, because obviously it does get cold here in the UK, and also solar panels installed. I'm going to have a look, actually, and see if I could qualify for that.
And if you have a carport, have the solar panels on top of the carport.
Absolutely.
And don't have impermeable surfaces car parking. You know, it really should be permeable, because the runoff from hard surfacing is exacerbating the flood risk, isn't it, in all our urban areas, and especially not just because overall we're having more rainfall and more intense, but when it falls on urban areas, the tendency for a flash flooding is so much worse when you've got all this hard surfacing.
That's it, because there's nowhere for it to soak away. Recently we've had a lot of rain, and when I say a lot of rain, I don't think it's stopped raining for months, or it feels like it, and the local park's just like a quagmire. But I mean, my dogs are quite happy running in it, rolling in the mud and getting filthy, which is fine, because that's what dogs are supposed to do. And then we go to the park and I throw a ball in the lake and they'll go for a swim.
Perfect.
Justin, when you do your programs, How do you feel you interact with the people of the city? I mean, do you know what kind of people listen to you and how much impact you have through doing your community radio on these environmental themes?
Well, it's difficult to measure, especially when you don't have a budget to do the kind of surveys that would really be necessary. But I definitely get good anecdotal feedback from listeners and, you know, comments online as well. But this is solutions-focused radio, and it's for people who don't want to wallow in more information about the decline of society and of the environment, but want to celebrate and uplift the many people in our community who are already doing the good work of sustainability in so many different fields, right? There is no end. I have not once struggled to find somebody to talk to about this because there are so many people in our community that just care in a variety of different ways about the kinds of change we need for sustainability. And the umbrella is so broad enough that I'm always just amazed at all of the people I get to meet through this program. Believe it or not, I'm an introvert. And so I actually really appreciate having a program where I have an excuse to schedule a time to sit down one-on-one with a fellow traveler in sustainability and learn about their perspectives and what they're doing and then share that with the listeners. It's just so rewarding. That's why I do this every week as a volunteer, right? I give my time. It's just so meaningful and valuable to me.
And what would your best three tips for sustainability be in your area?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'll put it at two because I think clearly identified in Louisville that the two most unsustainable things about our behaviors are how we get around and what we eat. So within those two big categories, of course, there's a lot of different things, but definitely our car-addicted culture here makes it very difficult for people to do the right thing, to think differently. And when you're dragging this, you know, one-ton box around with you, you not only take up a lot of real estate, but you think differently about things like shopping. And I know that probably the culture is very different over there, but the culture here in America is to, and this is the most common question I get as a car-free person, how do you go to the grocery store? Well, it's never a challenge for me because I don't do the kind of shopping most Americans do, where they go to these places where they can get large quantities of stuff and they fill up an entire car with groceries all at once. Whereas,
so shop local and buy
exactly,
what you need.
Exactly. Forage local, grow your own food, right? And suddenly, when you don't have this giant vehicle to get whatever you want and fill it up, you think differently about everything else in your life and where you're sourcing. And you definitely keep it more local and shop those corner stores or those local markets or start to grow your own, start to recognize the food that's already growing in your community and enjoy it. And that ties into the second big thing about how we eat. So, of course, a very meat-heavy diet has such a big environmental impact as well as an impact on our health. And so moving towards a more plant-based diet and more localized diet where we're eating fresher, more seasonally appropriate foods has such a big impact on us and our planet and our local economy. We are in an agricultural state. This should be a place where we're all eating locally instead of getting our food from California or China or God knows where.
In packets with lots of preservatives and additives.
Right.
Yeah, so doing the smaller scale shop for more local stuff that is perhaps not such a long life.
Yeah.
And then eating much more healthily, all of that. But that requires a lot of change
Absolutely.
In mindset and behaviour, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, and knowledge.
And so it can only be done gradually.
Right.
I suppose, do you find amongst your students that there is a change in the way that they approach these things?
I think so. I think the younger generation here in the United States is less interested in owning things like cars. They're more into a sharing economy. And so we think there's possibility for things like car share programs rather than everybody having to own their own vehicle and bring it to campus, but just have access to a vehicle if you need one, right? And yeah, I think in terms of food, I mean, it is tough to challenge this fast food generation. I mean, it's heavily marketed to people and it exists right there on our campus at University of Louisville, I'm sad to say. So it is hard to move people away from that. But when they taste the freshness coming out of our campus gardens, I think they recognize the difference. And I'll tell you, the most popular thing I get to organize every year is our service berry foraging event. Service berries are a native fruit here in North America, and they're delicious, much like a blueberry, but actually in the almond family. They're a little bit nutty, and they are ripe at the end of May here in Louisville, and we just fill pails of them up, and people love it. They love free food right under their noses, really, that they never recognized before.
When it comes to the autumn, we do apple juicing with the kids on this huge machine that looks like it came off the Ark. And you throw the apples in the top and grind them and then put them through a press. And the kids think it's magical. And it doesn't matter what state the apples are in, whether they're picked straight off the tree or wind falls, they all go through. Yeah. And they make the most wonderful, wonderful juice.
Love it.
We take that into the local schools as part of our Climate Action Seacroft work.
Wow.
And it is delicious. We've thought about turning it into cider, you know, adding a bit of yeast, and but we've not done that yet.
So Climate Action Seacroft, by the way, is one of the climate hubs of Leeds under this Climate Action Leeds umbrella. And they've got four initial hubs, and then they're adding four more under a three-year programme altogether.
Right, yeah.
And so Seacroft was deliberately chosen because it's got this particular demographic. Mm-hmm. And Clary is one of, as you'll have gathered by now, one of the main movers and shakers of all this. But in what way has being part of this citywide initiative affected the way you do things and the kind of impact that you're having, Clary?
I think on a very personal level, when I first joined Climate Action Seacroft, I'd just retired from teaching. I took early retirement and I was in a place where I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what skills I have. And volunteering initially for Climate Action Seacroft gave me the opportunity to explore those issues. Who am I? What skills have I got? And I found out, to my huge surprise, that I really enjoyed growing things. And when coronavirus came and we were in lockdown, we converted our garden into a small allotment, which was amazing, and started to grow food. And it was just like magic. My husband didn't even know he could grow potatoes. He thought they came from the shop. And then the big impact in the local area, we've had things like seed banks where people can come and take seeds for free and leave what they don't need, or take some plug plants away to grow. We've had sessions exploring this is how you grow, so that people that don't know how to grow stuff can learn right from the very beginning. This is how you place a seed. This is how you pot them on. Sort of demystifying, really. And then we've got the free fruit and veg growing. We work with the local trust so that people can explore low-energy cooking using slow cookers and air fryers. And they are actually provided with not just the air fryer, but also lessons in how to use it. And I think probably one of the biggest impacts we've had is with the local council, where we are seen now as being really fundamental to positive change in the area, because we're committed, we get stuff done, and we are making a genuine difference, not just to individuals, but also to the community as a whole, by providing more activities for them to do, more food for them for free, and all sorts of other activities. So we're going for walks, we're going foraging, getting up to mischief, having a lot of fun. Mm.
So it's building community coherence and resilience at the same time. Fantastic. So, Justin, can we ask you what you feel you've learned from us about our work here, both out there doing the sustainability stuff and then us as, you know, a little community radio volunteering group?
Well, I'm very impressed with what I've learned about your station and just what I heard there about the community building around climate action. I think that is something that Louisville could really learn from. We tend to think of it more, well, and this is an American problem. We're very individualistic in our approach to pretty much everything. And so we are not as good, I think, about thinking of how to approach these issues as community and do community building in the process. Not that it doesn't happen at all, but we definitely could learn from what you all are doing to create a more cohesive community-wide togetherness around these issues. There's so much political division, right? These issues tend to get polarized and people want to move into their particular political corners. But there are groups that are trying to bring us together for sure. There is a Renewable Energy Alliance of Louisville. There is a Louisville Sustainability Council now. Our Sierra Club has worked for decades to try and do some of this work and get people out on hikes and excursions and things like that. There are issue groups like a Solar Energy Society here in Kentucky and those kinds of things. But I think we could do better at some of that community building.
I think one of the key things, Justin, is that if you mention climate and climate action, people think, oh, you're a tree hugger. You must knit your own dishcloths. And not that there's anything wrong with that. But whereas what we're trying to do is more on the human level. So we're not wagging fingers at people. Rather, that we're saying, come along, join us, have some fun. Capturing people that way, really.
No, I love that.
Yeah.
That it's putting emphasis on the opportunities, not the problems.
Right, exactly. Right. And there is so much opportunity. That's something we need to grab.
As you say, solution-focused.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know we're ending the end of our time together. This has been really wonderful. I did want to end, though, getting back to the importance of radio in our work around climate action and sustainability. I've always been addicted to radio. I do think it's one of the most connecting mediums. The amount of work that our brains do in building the images that we hear on radio makes it one of the most visual mediums.
Definitely. The pictures are better
on the
radio.
Exactly. And I think there's something about that human connection of being right in your ear, that voice that's there every week here on Forward Radio, connecting you to new people in the community that you didn't know about. I just think it's a really valuable thing. And I'm so excited that our station is going to be celebrating its 7th year on the air coming up on April 9th. And it's so fun to now have this sort of sister Twin City connection with you all in Leeds right around the time that we're marking this occasion.
Well, I hope we can talk with you again another time
and just a beginning.
Catch up with all the various activities that are going on both sides, 4,000 miles apart.
Terrific. It's been such a pleasure, you all. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Take care now.
Cheers.
Thank you.
And stay tuned, everyone, here in Louisville, coming up in just a second. I've got your community action calendar, all kinds of ideas for what's happening this week that you can get involved in sustainability. So stay tuned, my friends. Here on Sustainability Now with me, Justin Mogg. I hope you've got your pencils sharpened, your calendars out. Let's take action for sustainability this week right here locally in Louisville, as they're doing over in Leeds. Coming up this month and for the rest of the season, it's Solarize Louisville again, starting going live Monday, March 25th. It's formerly known as Solar Over Louisville. The program covers not only Jefferson County, but also Oldham, Spencer, Shelby, and Bullitt County here in Kentucky, as well as across the river in Indiana. Harrison, Floyd, and Clark County participants are welcome. Louisville Metro Government is again partnering with the Kentucky Solar Energy Society and the Louisville Sustainability Council to launch the Solarize Louisville campaign to give households in our greater Louisville area the opportunity to go solar together and support the city's 100% clean energy goals. The campaign gives households bulk purchasing power to obtain discounted wholesale rates for solar installation from vetted installers. You don't have to worry about solar scams. Going solar will reduce your energy bills, increase your property's value, support local solar jobs, and help all of us meet our goal of 100% clean energy community-wide by 2040. You can learn more about it and sign up at louisvilleky.gov/sustainability. Now, on Tuesday, March 26th at 3:30 p.m. on U of L's campus at the Roush Planetarium, the University of Louisville Kahn Center for Renewable Energy Research invites you to a free public lecture with the 2023 Kahn Prize winner, Dr. Martin Green, professor at University of New South Wales in Australia. And Professor Green is often described as the father of modern photovoltaics and is recognized for his pioneering efforts and groundbreaking achievements in high conversion efficiency of silicon photovoltaic materials, as well as leading the invention and development of the passivated emitter and rear contact, or PERC, solar cell. The cells account for more than 90% manufactured in the world today at a sales value exceeding $100 billion to date. Hear his incredible technological development journey in person, or you can also stream it online. There'll be a reception in Gein's Science Hall, 3:30 to 4, and then the lecture right there at Roush Planetarium at 4 p.m. You can learn more at louisville.edu/sustainability. Tuesday is jam-packed with stuff for sustainability. Right after that, you can saunter on over to a zero-waste repair fair and free sale that U of L is hosting at the Red Barn on Tuesday the 26th from 4:30 to 6:30. The U of L Free Store is thrilled to announce this collaboration with the Louisville Time Bank, the Louisville Tool Library, and Level 1 Hackerspace to bring you a zero-waste repair fair. Join us to learn new skills from community leaders. This event will have an array of community members who will be sharing skills that can be useful in life, community, and sustainability. Come learn how to fix stuff or upcycle. And we'll also be having a free sale at the event. It's all offered to you by U of L's Free Store. It's a space for free exchange of clean, functional, durable items like clothing, shoes, electronics, appliances, household items, cleaning, bath and beauty supplies, books, school and art supplies, and more. Donations of stuff can always be made at this event, Tuesday from 4:30 to 6:30 at the Red Barn next to the clock tower on U of L's campus. But you can also donate anytime in the large red bins at the Garden Commons next to the Baptist Center. You can learn more at louisville.edu/sustainability. Now, also Tuesday, again at the Pick. Tuesday the 26th at 5 p.m. there's a reception and 6 p.m. lecture at the Filson Historical Society, also available as an online stream. An Introduction to Black Studies by Eric R. Jackson. For hundreds of years, the American public education system has neglected to fully examine, discuss, and acknowledge the vast and rich history of people of African descent who have played a pivotal role in the transformation of the United States. The establishment of Black Studies departments and programs represented a major victory for higher education. And in his text, An Introduction to Black Studies, Eric Jackson demonstrates the continuing need for Black Studies in university curricula. You won't want to miss it. It's going to be a great conversation, and you can learn more and get your tickets at filsonhistorical.org. Also Tuesday the 26th at 6:30 p.m. in the main library, it's another My Library U course, The Story of Anne Braden and Why It Still Matters, with the wonderful Dr. Kate Fossil, a Louisville native born in 1924 who grew up in Alabama. Anne Braden turned her back on a promising career as a newspaper woman to dedicate herself for almost half a century to fierce advocacy for racial and social justice. Charged twice with sedition and arrested multiple times, Anne Braden remained an outspoken writer and organizer locally until her death in 2006. Dr. Catherine Fossil, co-founder of U of L's Anne Braden Institute for Social Justice Research, will be examining how Braden's message has helped to shape our community and still resonates today. She is a professor emerita at U of L, where she co-founded the Anne Braden Institute and directed it for 15 years. And she's author of three books of history, including the award-winning Subversive Southerner, Anne Braden and the Struggle for Racial Justice in the Cold War South. This program is presented by My Library U, and is free and open to the public. Everyone's welcome at the main library on York Street, Tuesday, 6:30 p.m. You can register online at lfpl.org. Now, on Friday the 29th, we're finally done with Tuesday. Let's move on to Friday the 29th. The University of Louisville welcomes you to a Lunch and Learn workshop on time banking. It's going to take place at noon at the Cultural and Equity Center, or you can join online. U of L's Sustainability Council invites everyone out to our monthly EcoReps workshops that feature locals making a difference in sustainability and a free vegetarian lunch. We're going to continue our spring series with Linda Erzinger, former guest of this program and chair of the Louisville Time Bank, discussing how we build authentic, resilient, cooperative community right here in Louisville with the skills, knowledge, and time that we already possess. With over 600 members and over 28,000 hours exchanged, the Louisville Time Bank seeks to create a network of individuals and organizations that support and empower each other, which builds a social safety net that moves us towards being a more interdependent and resilient community. And you can learn more about it on Friday at noon with a free lunch at U of L's Cultural and Equity Center. More information is available at louisville.edu/sustainability. Now, on Saturday, March 30th, Trees Louisville is doing a free tree giveaway, a tree adoption event out at Churchill Downs. From 9 a.m. to noon, they'll be out at the Turquoise Lot off of Longfield Avenue, giving away 500 trees in one-gallon pots. The tree species available on Saturday at 9 a.m. are redbud, centennial blush magnolia, ooh, persimmon trees, swamp chestnut oaks, oh, I love it, eastern red cedars, pecan trees, and sweet birch. If you are interested in a free tree, come on out 9 a.m. to noon while supplies last at Churchill Downs in the Turquoise Lot off of Longfield Avenue. And coming up on Saturday, the 30th at 4 p.m., after you get your tree, coming out to La Casita Center in Old Louisville. They're on 223 East Magnolia Avenue for a Nick's Tamal Corn Festival. Forward Radio's proud community partner, Sustainable Ag of Louisville and La Casita Center, are so excited to bring back the Nick's Tamal Corn Festival after several years. Join us for this unique celebration of Latin American culture's resilience through colonization that highlights the beauty of storytelling, passed down food traditions, and growing community. We'll be honoring the indigenous roots of our culture with a festive story with a festival featuring heirloom corn grown sustainably by volunteers in community at a Three Sisters plot hosted by Bar Farms, and delicious dishes made from an old practice of using mixed tamal corn dough to create delicious foods like tortillas, pupusas, tamales, and more. If you'd like to bring an item to share, feel free to bring a dessert, and we also welcome any donations of white rice and dry black beans, which La Casita will be sharing during their Resource Tuesday events. No RSVP required, but you can let us know you're coming. Just email jo@lacasitacenter.org. Come on out this Saturday, 4 to 6 p.m. at La Casita. And this Sunday, it's last Sunday. That means it's car-free Cherokee Park from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Free yourself from the tyranny of the private automobile. On the last Sunday of each month, the Olmsted Parks Conservancy closes Cherokee Park to traffic from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. so that everyone can enjoy the scenic loop car-free and carefree. Learn more at olmstedparks.org, which is coming out this Sunday, March 31st, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. And lastly, I want to let you know that on Monday, April 1st, that is the deadline to register for free for the April 18th Kentuckiana Meeting for Advancing Participatory Sciences event, integrating health, environment, and community resilience. It's going to be held on Thursday, April 18th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Urban Design Studio at 427 West Muhammad Ali Boulevard. It's an intersection of environmental sustainability, health, and community development. And as that gains significance, it's imperative to foster collaboration among organizations leading efforts in these domains. Recognizing the shared commitment to fostering resilient communities, this meeting aims to explore synergies between climate change, health, outdoor recreation, and community resilience, fostering a holistic approach to address common challenges through a new vision of health. So join us for a day of recognizing opportunities, and showcasing excellence, and envisioning new partnerships in support of high-impact participatory sciences. It is variously called citizen science, community science, volunteer monitoring, and other things in the Kentuckiana region. There'll be plenaries, posters, and facilitated discussions. You can learn more all about it at participatorysciences.org. And again, April 1st is your deadline to register for free. That's all the time we have for today here on Sustainability Now. I want to thank you so much for tuning in, and I look forward to being back in your ears again in 1 week's time, my friends. Be well.